This is Air Commander Starscream, and you are listening to Half Measures. Half Measures? Sounds like Megatron's battle strategy.
Kia ora, and welcome to episode 167 of the Half Measures podcast. I'm once again joined by my friend and co-host, Mr. Paul Kanawa. How are you, pal?
Kia ora, Dan. I'm real good. How are you?
I'm pretty good. I can't complain. I've got a bit of a cough, so I apologise in advance to anyone listening with headphones on. But look, things are good. Things are good. Yourself?
A cough is the worst for a podcast. Like you could have a broken leg. You could have many things, and no one would know. But a cough, that's one of the worst for our business.
It is, and because you know, like when you want to cough, like you can feel it coming, and you, like, I don't know. It's a thing. We live in a world where coughing isn't good, but it's not that type of cough yet.
Let's hope so.
So, Paul, tell me, what have you been watching this week?
Well, Dan, I'm really excited to talk about this show. This is one that only recently came onto my radar, and it's been a real hit. And this is The Diplomat, season one on Netflix. And so the story here is a work colleague of mine was sat next to me on a plane. And there I was watching Doctor Who series 9, nearly finished, watched this space. And she's there, and she's just cracking up at the show she's watching. And she took the time to actually rewind a scene on her phone for me to watch. And it was from an early episode. And that was the moment I knew. I was like, I want in on this show straight away. So The Diplomat, this is on Netflix. This is a political thriller, if you like, a drama thriller. And so the synopsis here is that in the midst of an international crisis, Kate Wyler, a career diplomat, lands a high-profile job for which she is not suited. And it really just goes from there. Now, on the face of that alone, I'd be like, oh, yeah, could be interested. But this is an absolute top, top series. I have to say, I've sat here on this podcast and slagged off Netflix in the last year or so. As you know, I wasn't finding as much content as other platforms, but just like The Night Agent, this is another hit for me, Dan. Is this one on your radar?
It is on my radar, and it's mostly because of our lead actress here, Kerry Russell, and I'm such a big fan of her, particularly her role in The Americans, the 80s Russian spy drama. And this is very much, I keep seeing this pop up on my feed, and it's definitely one on my list, but I'm glad to hear you've already checked it out for me.
Yeah, and I'll definitely go spoiler light, because I don't want to ruin anything at all here. And I was just bothered by my own words before when I said that my colleague rewound the tape. Like, you don't rewind. There's no tape actually being rewound. I mean, what's the correct word to use when someone goes back a couple of...
It's interesting though, because you do... I'm gonna diverge for a moment. Some apps are better than others for like fast-forwarding or rewinding or
yeah.
skipping.
Scrubbing, yep.
That's a great word. Like, for example, I'm just going to... Like, Disney Plus, for example.
Oh.
They've got this terrible, like, sort of forward-skipping, 10-second jumps, but... It's often, if you are on like a mobile device, it's obviously often a bit easier. You've got a bit more control. But if you're trying to do it with a TV remote, some platforms, real headache.
Yeah, no, it really is. Anyway, back on track. Actually, on the subject of Kerry Russell, this is kind of my sort of first time sort of seeing her properly, as it were, because I know she was the lead in The Americans, and I know she is the lead in Felicity, but I've never really watched her in anything except as Zori Bliss in The Rise of Skywalker, which of course we never got to see her because she was wearing the mask and was sort of basically bantering back and forth with Poe. But for me, I think she's the terrific lead in this series. She really plays this. She plays a strong, intelligent, very sarcastic, but very politically astute diplomat, very, very convincingly. And I think, I mean, she's front and center, and she has this outward confidence about her that's always leaning towards her inner doubts. So she's very humble. She's never arrogant. And so that makes her a very likable character, coupled with the fact that she doesn't tolerate idiots or allow this very, very male dominated working environment to stop her from doing exactly what she wants. And the exception to that, and that's where the real fun of this series hits it for me, is with her husband, who is this very well-respected former ambassador played by Rufus Sewell. And I've raved about him many times, you know, Man in the High Castle, more recently in Kaleidoscope. But honestly, I would say his performance in this series is right up there with his very best as well. So you've got two leads really knocking out the park.
First question, how about the eyes? Kind or?
I'm not allowing my opinion of... Rufus Sewell has a great voice and a great stare. So he's got starry eyes. You know, he's got a real, like, did you ever watch Man in the High Castle?
I've seen maybe the first season and I really enjoyed it, but I've been always meaning to go back and watch it again. But
yeah.
No, I think the other thing that's really kind of standing out for me with this series is currently at number 5. On IMDb, that's huge, and the actual ratings for this are looking pretty good too, like a mid sevens, high eights. It's
yeah.
This, and my other favorite thing, only 8 episodes. That's perfect.
Yeah. Oh, and that's the thing: 8 episodes, less than an hour each. It's a very easy watch if you're doing a couple of nights. It's 100% a recommendation from me. And the real hook for me, I think, and the thing that elevates this show from great to top tier. For me personally, is that the show, so it's telling the story behind the scenes of that special relationship between the US and the UK. With, so you've got the president of the US played by one of our favorite Better Call Saul actors, Michael McKean, and then we've got the UK prime minister played by Rory Kinnear, who we've enjoyed as Tanner for many years in the Bond movies. And so the behind the scenes of how that works in reality, well, presumably similar to reality, who knows, is just really, really great to sort of see. Actually, the relationship's pretty tense and everyone hates everyone behind the scenes. And that's where the diplomacy of it all and the diplomat really comes to the fore. And then in addition to the two leads I've talked about, the other standout performances for me is David Gyasi. Apologies for the pronunciation. He plays the UK Foreign Secretary, and his back and forth with Kate Wilder is really good, with his over-the-top posh accent and her really down-to-earth, just get-it-done US attitude. So, yeah, he's a real standout. But the other actor I was going to give a shout-out to in this as well is, and again, I'm going to really butcher the name, I'm sorry, is Ato Asando, who... plays alongside Kerry Russell. He is terrific as well. So there's a lot of great acting, a lot of great story. I don't really have too much to criticize here. If anything, it was maybe too intelligent or too clever for me at times, trying to keep up with the subtleties of diplomacy and politics. I needed a process map to help me understand what was going on. You know what I mean?
And are we set up for a season 2 on this one?
Absolutely, yes, we are. And that being said, if they were to cancel it, which I'm absolutely certain they wouldn't, it would stand alone very well by itself. But yeah, no, there's a definite angle for a second season here for sure. So I can't wait to see that. So I guess I would say that when I think about this year alone, Jack Ryan season 3. The Night Agent season 1. This is, you know, these two shows plus this one, they all have similarities in the space they play in. They all have like that homeland vibe, but with their own flavor and style. And I would say, to give you an indication of all three of those, I would place this one top of the pops. And that's after me saying recently that Kind Eyes Night Agent could be a contender for top 10. So this is another hit for me. And all of a sudden, Dan, I've gone from having just two shows on my contenders for 2023 list, and now I have 5 alongside Poker Face, Picard, and The Last of Us, and it's only May.
Well, that's good. This is good. I was going to ask where this kind of fits in the potential making the top 10. But look, I'm convinced it's already on my watch list. I will be checking it out in the very near future, I imagine.
Very good. So yeah, so that's Netflix. Dan, what have you been watching this week?
Well, I also have a Netflix TV show for you. This one is called Beef. It's a 10-episode TV show. Is this one on your radar, Paul?
I've got about 2 episodes to go.
Oh, really? Okay. I will hold off so we can maybe do a bit of a joint review.
I was going to message you because I thought Dan's got to be on this.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, oh, it's funny. While I was watching it, I also thought the same thing. I was like, I probably should be talking to Paul about this. This is probably a great joint watch. All right, I'll just give the synopsis and then we'll move on so we can talk about it properly next week. But basically, it's about 2 people who get caught up in a road rage incident, and it then kind of follows their, I guess, life stories as they try to get revenge on one another. It stars Ali Wong and Steven Yeun, who you may know from The Walking Dead. But we'll come back next week with a full review. Let's not muck around and talk about it twice. Let's do it right.
I'm so glad you're on board because, yeah, I've already been thinking, I can't wait to talk about this, and now it's going to be even better. So that's great.
Okay, easy peasy. Shall we jump into our first joint review of the week, Star Wars Vision Season 2?
Yeah, so this is an anthology series that brings together some of the world's best anime creators into the Star Wars universe. Have I pronounced it right? I know I did it wrong last time.
No, anime. I think anime is a genre of animation. But
okay,
yeah. So I guess it's different animation studios, and depending on their chosen method of production.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so you and I, we did a joint review of the first season back in 2021. So it's been a wee while coming, this second season. And I know you and I were pretty big fans of the first season. But season 2, Dan, what are you thinking?
Well, I guess, you know, just as a bit of a reminder, if you haven't watched The Visions or don't sort of know the context, these are little independent Star Wars stories, not connected to the wider storyline, very much made for anyone to jump into, but they obviously draw heavily on Star Wars themes. And what's kind of unique about these is, so there's 9 episodes in each season, came out on May the 4th for Star Wars Day, and each studio, from what I understand, gets pretty free rein with their short story that they want to tell, and they kind of range from sort of 8 to 15 minutes, so they're fairly sort of bite-sized chunks. I think overall I enjoyed season 2 probably a little bit more than I did season 1. I thought it had a good mix of stories. I do have some criticisms with this. I think, much like the first season, there's some very strong episodes, and there's some that are a little bit maybe not quite as good for me. But I think this is another, you know, some of the themes are quite dark. Some of them maybe felt a little bit too similar in tone or story. And I think, I wonder if a symptom of this is because these different studios kind of get to go away and make something, and there's probably not too much kind of checking back in collaboration with what the other 9 stories are, that when it crosses over, it's kind of more by accident than by choice. And so probably my one big bit of feedback for this season is I kind of wish they'd take more risks and tell more different types of Star Wars stories. Like, not every story needs to be about a Sith or a Jedi and kind of finding the Force. And it kind of felt like that theme was a little bit of, and there's so many, as we know, in Star Wars, there's so many different wonderful things that you could kind of think about telling a story about. It doesn't all have to be Force related.
You should do this as a day job, Dan, because that's absolutely spot on, everything you've just said there. I agree with the exception of one thing, and that being I preferred the first season, and we'll come back to that. But too much similarity in the story, too much focus on the Jedi. You don't need to do it all the time. One of the great things about this is that they get given, as you said, free rein to go do what they want. But of course, if they're not checking in with one another, you can wind up with some very similar things. And it reminds me, I don't know how good your memory is, Dan, but with season one, I made the complaint that each episode they were using the line, I've got a bad feeling about this. And I was like, you can't have every episode using that line because it's too much. And the same is true here. I love that we get to enjoy something that's not canon, so you can just relax about, you know, what's going on in the universe saga, because it is specifically not canon, so you can have as much fun as you want, but don't always go to the Jedi, don't always go to the Sith or the Force. Some of the better episodes for me didn't involve that at all, and to the point I made about it being less effective for me than season one was just even looking at the season one stills now, I find that the season one stories are already for me more memorable all the way back in 2021, just looking at them now, than the ones that I've just watched this week of season two. That's my biggest criticism. But there is a lot of positive to talk about here as well. But yeah, overall, not as strong for me.
What would you say were your kind of standout episodes?
So I would probably go with, for different reasons, like from in terms of visuals, the bandits of Golak, I thought that was a really good look. It was very much my style. It was like a nice iteration of the style that Clone Wars uses. The final episode, the Ao's song, was a very, it was almost like a childish teddy bear like look, but it kind of worked somehow. But in terms of story, probably my favorite was actually the one titled I Am Your Mother. I just thought that was the most engaging, as well as the fact that I really liked the stop motion animation style that they sort of used. One of them looked just like Wallace and Gromit, but I thought that was a really effective visual story and just the most engaging, which is interesting because it's actually one of the lower rated ones when I look at the scores online. What about you?
And interestingly made by the Wallace and Gromit studio as well.
That makes a lot of sense.
I think it's interesting because I almost find myself more, like you say, appreciating these for their art style sometimes more than their story that they're telling. So for example, I actually really enjoyed the first episode titled Sith, purely because it kind of felt like they were taking the Sith concept and kind of like really like playing with that theme through art and what it means to try to, you know, as an artist trying to sort of get that balance with the dark side of the Force. I enjoyed the anime style of Journey to the Dark Head. I equally kind of appreciated the, like, ones I didn't think I would, even though the story was like the Spy Dancer, for example, mm-hmm. about these sort of rebels being part of this sort of theater group where stormtroopers kind of hang out. And it just, I thought it was a sort of an interesting story. I also, even though, again, doesn't rate that highly, I thought The Pit was a very dark episode for, like, in the mix of what kind of felt like a lot of children's stories, because just the way they kind of dealt with, I guess, almost like colonization and just leaving people in pits. Like, it had a lot of kind of dark themes kind of embedded in it. And I'm also with you that their very final episode was so beautifully done, which I think was done by a South African studio, but just the way, as you say, it looked like everyone was made out of fabric or sort of material, and just the way it was sort of brought to life in high definition was really great. I found this whole collective season a relatively easy watch. Like, I'd sort of get into an episode and all of a sudden the credits would be rolling so quickly. So it feels like I was a bit like that with season one. There's some characters in here that you could almost kind of, you would love to know a little bit more about. If they were to do that with sort of future seasons, like the option would be there. But I guess also the beauty is that they are one off.
The ability to make you care about a character in such a short space of time, as a short animation sequence, you know, when things happen, you know, it's difficult to always connect. In The Stars, episode 3, that one did manage to do that. That was the two sisters who were the last of their kind, sort of trying to find water. I really enjoyed the story on that one as well. I really enjoyed the different styles. They, you know, less than 20 minutes of pop, I can easily, that works for me as well. Other than season one of this, ironically, the only sort of anime that I've ever really seen is Star Wars, the 2D 2003 Clone Wars. So my window is narrow. My experience and my ability to compare and contrast is kind of limited. But I did love some of the voice cast that we had in this again. So we had Dennis Lawson reprise his role as Wedge in I Am Your Mother, which is kind of a blink and you'll miss it kind of moment, where much like his cameo in The Rise of Skywalker, Angelica Houston as the Sith mother, Daisy Haggard from Breeders was good in the episode that was, you know, the Wallace and Gromit style one. So there was a lot of positives in here. I think sometimes for me, it's just some of the it's really disappointing that the story, because as you say, they could be really bold and take risks and whatever. Some of the story was too similar that it just didn't have that that level of engagement. That whole wanting to press play on the next episode wasn't quite there. I just kind of let it play because it was the next one, but I didn't. If the sixth episode had been the last one, I wouldn't have been disappointed, thinking, "Oh, I wanted more." I enjoyed it, but I just wasn't really, really drawn in. Not as much as the first season, anyway.
It's funny, isn't it? Because it kind of fits into some of the wider Star Wars conversations we've been having. Like, though I appreciate the funness of Visions and that it's unique and standalone and just a bit of fun to a degree, I feel like the idea of, you know, like if you go back to the core of A New Hope and like being a Jedi and using the Force was so special. And I feel like now we've just got so much Star Wars content where, like, it's just everywhere. Like, Luke Skywalker is almost not special anymore. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's so many other great Star Wars characters. It does dilute the franchise so much. And I think this is, like, we're kind of just at the start. Like, you know, if you imagine 10, 15 years from now, there's going to be so much Star Wars content, right? Like, it's going to be huge. It's going to be overwhelming.
It will be. And the fact that it is non-canon, it's kind of like, are people going to prioritize it? They're like, look, I've got enough canon to watch here. I don't need non-canon coming in my into my watch list as well. Another shout out I want to give in the first episode, the one you really liked, the Sith episode, Lola was voiced by Ursula Corbero, who's possibly best known as playing Tokyo in Money Heist. I think from a voice cast, I thought she was pretty impressive in that. But I will happily watch a third season should one come along. I think having watched Bad Batch this year as well and having some issues there, I think if I was to take those best episodes of Bad Batch, that's where my value is in terms of that broadening the wider universe and building that universe compared to this. But I think this would be perfect for me, Dan. I don't know why I didn't think of it before. This would be the sort of perfect thing to watch on a plane, I feel like, for me. It could be a real easy watch on a plane for some reason. Feels right.
I think I kind of watch it in the same way. I just kind of would put an episode on and then all of a sudden I've watched five of them, but not necessarily like, you know, like, oh my God, I can't wait for the next episode. This is so good. I think it's fun. I just would love to see them take a few more chances with volume 3. And even just stay away completely from Jedi and Sith and tell me a story about, I don't know, a young Gungan or you know, Admiral Ackbar's extended family. I don't know, just anything but what we're so used to, I think could be quite interesting. But this is available, all 9 episodes, volumes 1 and 2, on Disney Plus right now.
Should we go across then to movie of the week time?
We shall indeed. So each week, Paul and I take turns choosing a different movie. If you'd like to find out what that movie is, then you should come and join our Discord channel where we announce that movie each week before the podcast. So you can watch along and listen to our review as we discuss it here. Today, Paul, we are reviewing the 2022 movie Bullet Train.
Bullet Train. Five assassins aboard a swiftly moving bullet train find out about their missions and find out they all have something in common. This is a great cast movie led by Brad Pitt. Can't remember the last time I saw a sort of a movie with sort of Brad Pitt as the lead, sort of, you know, the big picture on the poster. I can't remember the last time it was him. What are you thinking for this one?
This movie on paper, and I never saw the trailer to this before coming into it, didn't overly kind of like jump out at me, but I had a fantastic time with this. It had a real Guy Ritchie kind of vibe and feel to it the whole time I was watching it. I thought the story was fun, the cast was fun, the action was fun. It's just it felt like a real good, high-quality popcorn movie, and I'm glad I've seen it. I would highly recommend it. How about you?
This is one of those movies that I can sum up in like one sentence, and immediately I can recommend it in like five words. Funny, entertaining, great action, fun. The Guy Ritchie is a good, elements of it's Guy Ritchie or even Matthew Vaughn.
Good call.
If anything, it's actually the most closest style would be, do you ever see a movie called Smoking Aces? Which wasn't maybe the greatest movie, but it did have a fun style. And yeah, I really, really enjoyed this a lot more than I expected to. Ad Astra was the last Brad Pitt lead movie that I saw back in 2019, where he was like the out and out lead, if you like.
Yeah, so I think, so the actual premise of this film, considering that like 90% of it takes place on a train, is so well done. I think I think Brad Pitt, this was a real standout role for him. Mm. I enjoyed his role as Ladybug. I enjoyed his handler being Sandra Bullock. I enjoyed the different duos of Hitman, particularly the two brothers.
Yes. Tangerine and Lemon.
Yeah, just so good. And it just reminds me of, like, it sort of had like a bit of a Snatch or Lock, Stock kind of vibe. But it was kind of a bit of a mashup of all of these great type of gangster movies. I feel like the story was deep enough to keep it interesting. They had enough kind of different plot points to keep it driving forward, because it's quite a long movie for what it is. Like 2 hours, 7 minutes. It's definitely kind of got me thinking. I remember at one point in this movie, we paused it for some reason, and we were both surprised. Oh my God, it's got an hour to go. We kind of thought we were wrapping up. But in saying that, I didn't find myself clock watching. I was just surprised how long it was.
Correct. And that's a good sign, because this type of movie, you and I would often say, you don't need much over an hour and a half to tell this type of story and to have that sort of fun. And yeah, two hours, seven didn't feel like it was too long at all. It was just right, and there was no drag, there was no sort of lull. It was just a lot of fun. I love that the movie is trapped within the confines of a train, and we only ever it sort of stops at platforms, and you only ever get 60 seconds at each platform for anyone to exit the train and then get back on. And so it really is just that combines, but how all those individual stories all came together as people are moving through the carriage and not, you know, at that point not realizing who each other are. I just thought it really, really worked very, very well. And it's interesting, because I was thinking, oh, this movie's sort of set in Tokyo, and yet very few people on this train were Japanese, and it didn't quite add up. It's like I was trying to think, well, why isn't this movie, you know, set on a British rail train, or, you know, on the Metlink train here on the Hutt Valley or the Wairarapa line? Like, what's, and I guess it's because it needs to be a bullet train.
No, I think it's kind of a weird movie to review, isn't it? Because it's It's got a lot of laughs. It's got a great cast. It's got some fantastic cameos. As you said, it's just fun. And it's kind of nice to go into a movie like this and just kind of have that one-and-done experience with such a star-studded cast. This is an all-the-guns experience for me.
Yeah, I think people probably get sick and tired of listening to this podcast of me talking about writing. But this is the sort of movie where I could have accepted a poor story. I could have accepted bad writing, and I still probably would have had fun just with the action, the cast, the speed and all of those things, the style of the direction. But as you said, there's enough story going on here that actually the story is really, really satisfying. Now, I guess the ending was a little over the top in a movie that was already pushing it to the limits. Maybe it went a little too silly, and some of those spoilers, but some of the things that happened at the end, I'm pretty sure that the laws of physics would disagree with some of those things. But there's a lot to love about this movie, and it is another one of those great Saturday night popcorns.
What do you give it, Paul, on the Guns Akimbo?
All the guns. Yeah, no, agree.
All the guns. Same with you. All right.
Because we put forward two movies this week, and it was one of those ones where both were like a double A side record from back in the day. It was both are great, and I was going to be happy whichever way you went, and I'm really glad we went for this one.
Indeed, indeed. So if you want to check this out, this is on Neon here in New Zealand. Shall I take us over to the news desk?
Yes, please.
We're racing through tonight, Paul. I've seen I haven't been talking about my TV show, but let's see.
We could be on for a record pod.
Yeah, indeed, indeed. So what have we got first? So I'm going to bring this up because it came up in our Discord channel recently about what's going on with Jonathan Majors. So Jonathan Majors was meant to be the next big bad in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. He was coming in as Kang the Conqueror. Unfortunately, he was arrested recently for assault, and it's turned out that he's the next big bad in real life as well. So may not be sort of making it to the MCU. There's lots of sort of Hollywood talk about recasting.
Yeah.
So that's interesting because obviously they've sort of set the scene with him coming in, and it's going to be obviously a bit of a change to move that forward. But anyway, the show goes on. There is a punishment for the crime, I guess. Speaking of the MCU, Loki Season 2 now has an official release date. It's going to be returning on October the 6th. So not too far away. I feel like we're racing through the year. Following in that same Marvel suit, there is a new spin-off series, a spin-off from Hawkeye called Echo. And that's actually all going to drop all at once, which is the first time Marvel's done this. Marvel's on Disney. And again, it looks like we're going to be getting that on November 29th, so a full season, which will be interesting to kind of see how that does model-wise. It makes me feel like they're not confident in the show dropping the whole season all at once. So we'll see what happens. What have we got here? Archer, a much loved FX animated TV show that is coming to an end with its 14th season, which is a pretty good run. I really enjoyed Archer, but it's been a long time since I've watched the episode.
I reckon I got about 7 seasons in and just sort of found other things and never went back.
Yeah. What else have we got here? So the first 4 Indiana Jones movies are coming to Disney Plus on May 31st, which is good because I know, Paul, you've been wanting us to sort of start reviewing those movies, and I was thinking to myself, where am I going to watch them? Thankfully, Disney Plus has come through. And then the final bit of news that I wanted to talk about tonight is Yellowstone coming to an end with Season 5, but a sequel show coming hot on the heels. So it's kind of been long talked about over the last month, sort of several weeks, that things have been looking a little bit rocky on Yellowstone. There's a lot of different rumors around, particularly the sort of Taylor Sheridan, Kevin Costner relationship. I know that there's there's also been news that Kevin Costner really wants to bring down the number of shooting days that he's required on set for Yellowstone. I'm very intrigued to see how they're going to wind up season 5 and be ready to go with a spin-off series, potentially continuing some of these stories. And I'm intrigued for a couple of reasons. I think one, because we've still got our spin-off 4-6's Ranch story, which, you know, we've already got half our cast potentially heading down that way anyway, so that, yep. that could be a good thing. We've got a writer's strike on, and so the kind of aspiration of we're going to have a show ready to go in, you know, late November, early December feels unlikely when they haven't even sort of started filming, but they are talking about Matthew McConaughey potentially sort of stepping in to take a lead role. Very intriguing. I'm intrigued what you think about this one, Paul. I know that we didn't overly love season 5, and I think it's so fascinating, isn't it? Because I feel like a lot of people came late to the party with Yellowstone, and it started so strong, but to kind of to go out this way feels unfortunate.
Well, we didn't like season 5 part 1. Season 5 part 2? I mean, it's look, Matthew McConaughey in a lead role, that's quite exciting. In the same vein as Harrison Ford coming in 1923 as a lead there, I think there's excitement there. But the one good thing I see out of this is, if you think about The Walking Dead, and I know we use it as an analogy all the time, but those first 6 seasons were, and still are, some of the best television I've ever seen, and one of the best TV shows of all time. Those first, and then it went on, and so better to end it whilst it's still like season 5 part 1 isn't all bad. It was just they've maybe gone down a pathway that they don't need to. But I think the aspiration of having a sequel show be ready so soon may be a little bit too aspirational given the writer's strike.
Indeed. But that is all from me on the news desk this week, Paul. Anything on your end?
The only thing I was going to add to that, because I was going to talk about Yellowstone too, was that we've got our, you know, we've just talked about season 3 of Jack Ryan. We've got our final season coming out next month, which is the quickest I've seen 2 back-to-back seasons ever.
They must have filmed it back-to-back, yeah. Surely. Like, I'm so, well, how has this come out so quickly? I don't understand.
Yeah, so but looking forward to that, because that's another show that is really, really enjoyable. That's all I've got this week, Dan. I'll just quickly bring us across over to Mailbag. A couple of things here. Firstly, Matthew Quirk, who was the best-selling author of the Night Agent book and the series, the creator of Kind Eyes, he shared a Night Agent post on his Twitter to his followers. And then the second thing I've got here, Ian Kelly, who currently lives in the Bahamas, but is soon to move to Miami, we've discovered. He's just discovered our podcast, and he said he messaged to say he decided the best place he thought to start would be with our top 10 for 2023 podcast, which is exactly the sort of thing I've always hoped a new listener would do, is to jump in and think, oh, where's a good place to start and find that. That's great. So he did that, and he says he agrees with most of our ratings. He loved Andor. He was disappointed with Obi-Wan Kenobi, and he has subsequently added to his list The Rehearsal and The Lazarus Project. So great to have you listening, Ian, and welcome into the Half Measures Fano.
I love that, Paul. That's actually a great place. It's so good. Next time someone says, where should I start? Start with the top 10, and it'll give you a good flavor.
That's right. I love it. He also mentioned he's working his way through Peaky Blinders, which of course just finished up its final season last year. So he's already hoping a review of that show might show up on the pod one day, Dan.
It's very much on my list. I feel like I've watched it. I'm about two seasons behind, maybe. So right. I feel like what I'm going to do with Peaky Blinders is I'm going to start a fresh watch and sort of start from the beginning and do the whole thing all over again, because it's a fantastic show. So I will bring you a Peaky Blinders review at some point.
Nice one. And then finally, Dan, last peak performance we did was Uma Thurman. And we have 3 contributions this week. Graham from Island Bay here in Wellington went with My Super Ex-Girlfriend, which is not one I remember ever watching, to be honest. So that's a great shout, because that's not one that was on our list. Diana here in the Capti Coast went with Kill Bill Volume 1. And Paddy from Time Traveling Tink podcast gave us his 3-2-1 of Gattaca, Pulp Fiction, and the peak performance was Kill Bill Volume 2. Not Volume 1, as he has always felt that Volume 2 was more character heavy, and he loves it for that. So that's his peak performance, and that's our mailbag this week.
Shall we jump into our peak performance for this week?
Yes, yeah, so like our movie of the week, Dan and I take it in turns to choose someone from the movie and TV world, and then we look back at their history thus far and try and pick out what's their best. This week, Dan, Damian Lewis.
Yeah, Damian Lewis. So I wonder how in sync we're going to be this week, Paul, because, you know, Damien's got a great back catalogue, but there's two choices I can't go past. I tried to, and I couldn't do it. So honourable mention for me is going to be 2011's Homeland for Damien's role as Nicholas Brody. And I think why it's getting the honourable mention is just the role that he played as a veteran of the Iraq War, the twists and the turn, and is he part of a terrorist network? Is he loyal to the US government? Like, just so well done. And I think it's complemented by my first love of Damian Lewis in Band of Brothers, and 100% my peak performance. You and I have talked about this show many times. I could watch Band of Brothers any day of the week. Such a amazing, amazing series. And particularly where he's Captain Winters, he's the most stand-up soldier you can possibly imagine. And to sort of come from Band of Brothers into Homeland to two such polar opposite kind of roles, but at the same time, so many close linkages, I think it really just speaks to the depth of his craft. So Damian Lewis, Homeland, and Band of Brothers. How about you, Paul?
It's been a while, Dan. It has been a while since we have been completely in sync on a peak performance. I'm trying to think when the last one might have been, but my honorable mention, like you, is Nicholas Brody in Homeland. And, you know, this is a top show. You and I have both enjoyed it. We both rate it really highly. And, you know, you've even sort of, what's the word I'm looking for? Like a benchmark. Even today, when I'm talking about Night Agent and Diplomat and Jack Ryan, I'm always sort of saying there's a Homeland thing there, because it sets the standard. And what Damian Lewis did really well is he gave such a convincing performance as Brody. He gave his character's own authenticity that I could not tell through the power of that if he was a loyal American or if he'd been turned by Al-Qaeda. And when I look at all eight seasons, one of the reasons season one and two do rate in the top half of my ratings is because that Damian Lewis factor and the role and that dynamic that he had with Claire Danes, Carrie Mathison. It's impossible to go past that as an honourable mention. And like you, again, has to be as Captain Winters in Band of Brothers. I just had a look. This is a series that sits at number 8 on my all-time top 10 TV series of all time. And amongst an extraordinary cast, it's Damian that, you know, in that lead role, that is the, you know, it's kind of the driving narrative, isn't it, throughout? And it's just incredible. And I just don't think, imagine being one of the actors on that series, leaving that series, having wrapped, you could surely just walk away just thinking you could never expect to be involved in something quite so special ever again. Mm. And I was just checking the ratings down, 9.4 out of 10 from nearly half a million votes. That's the people's vote. So what I find interesting is that, and this may be ignorance on my part, and I was just quickly scrolling, but given how great he was in Band of Brothers in 2001, it wasn't really until 2010's Homeland that he sort of got I'm just surprised he didn't get a bigger role for nearly a decade. Maybe there's something I'm missing, or maybe someone else will have a peak performance that comes in. But yeah, extraordinary.
Indeed, indeed. Well, Paul, that probably brings us to the end of another episode of the Half Measures podcast.
It does indeed. Thanks for listening in once again. And do let us know your peak performance for Damian Lewis. And let us know if me and Dan have said anything wrong this week. We always like to hear the opposing views. That's where the fun is.
Indeed. Also, a very special shout out to our Patreon producers, Samara White and King, Diana Kanawa, Trisha Brady, and Michael Chalmers. If you too would like to become a patron of the podcast, then you can find those details in the show notes below. But until next week, everyone, adios.